Morning, Chair, ladies and gentlemen. It's an honor and a pleasure for me to be here and address you in this at this forum of public administration in general and municipal performance in particular. I was asked to give an introduction to talk about international trends, but first, before I start with that, let me start with a joke. I think it's about how to get your ticket to heaven, to the heaven of performance. And when I came here, it's about a priest and a Roman taxi driver. And they both are at the gate of with St. Peter, and in line, of course. And the first is the Roman taxi driver, and St. Peter looks at his performance report. And he says, not bad, not bad. There are some minuses, but yeah, you have a ticket for heaven. So the Roman taxi driver is actually very surprised, and he goes to heaven. Then comes the priest, and St. Peter takes the performance report. And St. Peter says, there are some problems, I'm afraid. I'm afraid you will have to go to purgatory for a while, just for a while, and then we will see. There will be a reevaluation, of course, etc. And then the priest says, but that must be a mistake. It must be a mistake. No, there is no mistake. He said, but the taxi driver, I don't understand. I'm a priest. I'm an expert in this kind of performances. And St. Peter says, let me tell you something. When you started preaching in the church, everybody fell asleep. But when people went into this taxi driver's car, they all started praying. So the question is actually, how can we get into the heaven of performance? Is there a kind of magic way to do that? I have 7 points which are actually derived from international practices, 7 because it's a sacred number too, I suppose. It's 7 expressions of indications of research and practices internationally within the OECD. It's about focusing on the right things. It's about responsibility, accountability. It's about readiness. It's about the quality of indicators and trusting indicators. It's about cost-benefit analysis, the cost-benefit analysis of focusing on performance. It's about supply and demand of information on performance. It's about use, non-use, and even abuse of performance indicators. So let's start with the first one. This is general scheme, of course. I'm sure you know this by heart, and you printed it out, and it's in your bedroom to see it daily, you know, to have this kind of schemes here. And I think the question is, all these ratios, economy, efficiency, productivity, effectiveness, cost effectiveness, but also trust, outcome trust, and all these interactions, these 7 interactions, the question is, what is your focus? And do you make that explicit? Do you have such a scheme? Do we have such a scheme? Do we have numbers to put on this scheme? Can we communicate what the priorities are if we look at this scheme and if we say this is what we want to do if we talk about performance? In many cases, we say, let's do more with less as a kind of rhetorical sentence. But I think we have to refine that and to make it more tangible. And the question is, are we doing that? And of course, there are many reasons why we are not doing that. And it's because sometimes we are so absorbed by urgent things rather than by the important things. Savings, for example, we are absorbed by urgent savings. And so what you see abroad is that sometimes you lose sight from performance in the broad meaning. The question of responsibility and accountability for performance. I will come back to that in a special scheme. And also, where are you in this organization? Are you a politician? Are you a top civil servant? Are you a frontline person? where you stand is where you sit. If you talk about performance and a focus on performance, we observe that we actually have different performance indicators for different purposes and that we have to make that explicit too. So to go to the performance heaven, we have to have a focus and we have to make that explicit and to just go for that. The second thing is on responsibility and accountability. There's a small mistake in the slide. It should be no responsibility here. So no accountability, no responsibility. Who is responsible for performance? I depicted here four zones. The zone A is a bit of a nightmare zone. Nobody is responsible for performance and nobody is accountable for performance. It happens. There are two zones of frustration, B and C. What we observe in certain cases is that people are responsible, but they are not accountable. That creates problems. But the reverse happens too. I am accountable for performance, but I don't have the tools to run the business. My responsibility is actually limited because I don't control the quality of the people. I don't control the budget, but still I am accountable. Again, that creates a zone of frustration. And sometimes B and C are combined. What we need to do is actually organize a position D here. We have to organize responsibility for performance and we have to organize accountability for performance. And to make sure we are driving into this D cluster, within the D, of course, we have different degrees of intensity and we have different ways to organize performance. If you look at OECD countries, one of the most common denominators is to change the way we organize responsibility for performance and the way we organize accountability for performance. And that's a crucial issue to do. Another issue and difficulty of responsibility and accountability is about levels of government, of course. The micro level is the organizational level. The meso level is a policy level, and the macro level is the state level. And again, the question is, how can we define responsibility and accountability for these three levels? If I look at the meso level, the policy level, who feels responsible for health, a healthy population, for an educated population, for a safe population? Who feels responsible for that? Because the production functions are quite complex. It's a chain of production. The chain management is important. So it's about trying to consolidate that. And the sum of the individual micros, of these individual organizations, it does not equal to the meso level. It's not because the hospitals are well run, that you have necessarily a healthy population and a performing health policy. And so again, there is a kind of challenge here to organize responsibility and accountability, of course, at the organizational level. And that's necessary, but it's not sufficient. We have to organize responsibility and accountability for performance at the meso level too. And that's crucial at the policy level. I think that's actually a missing link, and especially after new public management, we have been too much focusing on single organizations. We have been believing too much that if the single organizations perform well, that then automatically the policy and the macro level are doing well. That is definitely not the case. It's about performing coordination. It's about performing consolidation. So it's about performing ways of partnerships and how to include NGOs and private sector. Many things have been done if we talk about reforms. This is a kind of double triangle. We have the municipal council is here, the legislative, but you have the mayor and the alderman here and the administration and the citizens here. I mean, these are six relationships. If you look at reforms within the OECD, we see that all these relationships have been upgraded and that efforts have been made to improve the quality of these relationships in a sense that performance becomes more visible. I will just show you some initiatives that have been taken. We now have performance budgets and performance audits. We have citizens' charters. We have contracts. We have SLAs, service level agreements. We ask, we organize surveys on satisfaction. Sometimes we have hearings. We have OMBUD. These are the six points I'm referring to say we are upgrading these relationships. And it would be interesting for you to have that map too, to see how are we actually upgrading these relationships to make sure that we organize responsibility and accountability for performance. So that's actually the conclusion here is, if we want to go to the performance heaven, the conclusion is we have to organize responsibility and accountability for performance in an explicit way so that we are in this D zone and not in the zone of frustration. The third point is, are we ready for performance? I mean, performance is ready for us, but are we ready for performance? That's a bit of a tough one, too, because it includes cultural issues. It's about cultural issues, too. I think, are we ready for performance or not? It's actually about the broad agenda of managing performance. And if I would ask you, who is against performance? Who is against performance? Nobody. Who is against quality? Nobody's against quality. Who is against democracy? Yes, there are some people against democracy, but that's not the topic. That's not the topic. If we all agree on yes, quality, yes, performance, it actually means that we all have different meanings. So we have to make that explicit. And what you see in reality is actually that there are like four patterns which we observe within the OECD on managing performance. Nobody's against managing performance, but you find these four practices in reality. The first is performance administration. Some people would say, yes, of course I'm managing performance. I fill in forms and I send them to Rome. Yes, I'm managing performance. That's actually performance administration. It's a kind of bureaucratic way of handling performance. It's necessary, it's useful, it's probably not sufficient. But we administer performance. The second way to look at managing performance is actually a very interesting one. And many countries and many organizations are in this family. It's management's plural of performances, plural. It means, yes, the personnel administration, they think in terms of performance. Yes, the financial department, they work with performance, but in a different way. Yes, strategy is working on performance, but in a different way. Yes, communication is thinking in terms of performance and communicating this to citizens, but it's different. Yes, we have contracts with all types of organizations, public and private, and there is some element of performance, but it's different. So it's a disconnected way of managing performance. And that's probably very comfortable and very necessary, but it's not sufficient. The third one is performance management. That means we have a coherent set, a coherent model, and everybody uses this model. It's like the first scheme I've been showing. The finance people, the policy people, the personnel people, the strategy people, the communication people, the politicians, the civil servants, the NGOs with whom we work, we all use the same scheme and the same model. That's performance. That's more coherent. That's consolidated. And the fourth model is actually performance governance. That's like a bit of a challenge too, because it opens the black box. We include our stakeholders. We include our NGOs, our citizens. Yes, they participate in defining indicators. Yes, they participate in evaluating things. Yes, they participate in co-deciding. And so together, we are moving from public sector performance to public service performance. It is the public service which is crucial. And we, as a public sector, are part of this public service. And that requires public sector performance governance. I invite you to check where you are on this map. Are we ready or not? There are many organization readiness checklists. I'm not going through them. You know, it's all kinds of technical checklists when you can say yes, yes, no, yes, yes, no, and it's audited and it creates capacity, etc. It's important to look at it here too. So it's important to look where you are and perhaps try to move in the right to the right here in this scheme. But then you have to look at measurement, incorporation, and then use, non-use. Measurement is necessary, but it's not sufficient. We have to incorporate our indicators in documents, in platforms where we discuss them. And then ultimately, incorporation is necessary but not sufficient. We have to actually use it. So it means that management by indicators actually requires indicator management. We have to guarantee measurement, incorporation, and use. But we also have to watch costs and benefits. And we have to match supply and demand. I will pay a special attention to these two. So if we conclude here, are we ready or not? What is our ticket to performance heaven? Well, it actually means that we should make sure that we are preparing our stakeholders to participate and to move from performance administration to more performing models like performance management or performance governance. The fourth point I have is on the indicators itself. We should trust good indicators and we should distrust bad indicators. The question is, of course, what is a good and a bad indicator? And again, there are lists of features here. I will show you the space. It's a three-dimensional space of indicators. First of all, of course, they should be technical, fit for purpose, validity, reliability. You know, we know this from our primary school. At least some primary schools teach that, you know, we have to have, if I measure something and you measure it, it should be the same. And if we say we measure something, we should make sure that we really say that what we measure is measured. So this is the validity and reliability. It's technical. It's technical. Engineers are very good in this. It's technically okay, so it's okay. No. Absolutely not. It should also be legitimate. I mean, the legitimacy is here means those to whom it applies, do they accept the measures? Do they accept them? Because you could say, well, yes, they say, the technicians say it's okay, but I don't recognize that. I have to do the job, and I absolutely don't recognize these indicators. So what we sometimes do is try to get involved if you want to make a legitimate indicator. Why is it important to have a legitimate indicator? Because you want to avoid cheating. Because if people don't believe in it, then they will cheat. They will try to manipulate because they say, I have no choice. I have no choice. So we have to make sure that the indicators are actually that owned, that you, there is ownership of the indicators to whom they apply. The best way to do that is to involve them in the development and make sure that those to whom it applies are actually saying, how do you want to be judged? You know. And of course, there's checks and balances here. If I ask students, how do you want to be judged? They say, if I'm happy, I pass. Not if I pass, I'm happy. The other way around. So we have to have some debate there, a contradictory debate. But it's important that they are involved in the debate. The third dimension is functionality. I mean, the indicators should push the organization to its objectives. It should push the organization to success and not to failure, and then it becomes otherwise dysfunctional. So it's important to say, to make a reflection, where are you on this space? I mean, this galaxy of performance, where are you located? It's a cultural issue. And of course, the ideal utopia is here in 8. But utopia does not exist. Actually, the first edition of Utopia by Thomas Morris was published in 1516 in Leuven. So from that point of view, we are celebrating that in a couple of years. But utopia does not exist. So we have realities. But we can improve things. And you have to have a strategy. Where are we now in our measurement positioning? Where do we want to be? How do we go from A to B? I think that's a crucial element also in successful stories there. Let me give you an example. We did this exercise with actually an international audience. And I'm only referring here to the two dimensions. Those that are involved, we'll ask them, position this on utility and feasibility. And we selected, we discussed, we scored, we evaluated, and then we decided on the indicators. And of course, we accept what is very useful and feasible, and we do not, you know, we try to reject this here. To show you, just as an example, I mean, it doesn't really mean what type of indicator is there, but you can have a mapping of this kind of indicators. And it creates ownership. People are committed and involved there. So you see, we have selected this area. We have not selected this here. This is empty, but I could show you other examples where there were indicators which were positioned there. So conclusion. The conclusion is, yes, we need good measurement. It's necessary but not sufficient. And we can organize by trying to get people involved in developing indicators and a set of indicators. And it's important to trust good indicators. One of the champions of indicators is the UK. And they have always been very impressive in developing indicators. But suddenly, the indicators in the UK became disconnected from reality. And people start, that's the worst thing that can happen, that people start to distrust indicators because they say, my feeling is different from what the scaling is saying. So that's the worst thing that you can get, that ultimately the measurement systems you develop are not reflecting realities anymore, are not owned, not recognized, become dysfunctional. And then, of course, that's like not a very good position to develop a managing performance philosophy. The fifth one is costs versus benefits. There's an intriguing thing in this whole performance management, managing performance debate, a very intriguing thing. Everybody likes it. Everybody says yes, or at least officially, yes, we support this. And still, it's not really happening, or not sufficiently happening. Why is this? I mean, that's a very intriguing thing. Why is the obvious not so obvious? If you all agree, I'm quite sure after this session, you will be marching out to jump on your organizations to transform them, singing to win the battle. No. We are realistic. We say yes, but. What is the but? It's actually about the cost-benefit analysis of indicators. What we see, there are costs, yes. Creating data, transferring, collecting, processing, storing, making it available, it's a lot of costs. There are benefits, yes. We compare, we register change, we can improve decisions, better allocations, all the things in the textbooks, you know. Transparency, responsibility, learning. Yes, we know that from the textbooks. However, The costs are unconditional, immediate, undisputable, tangible. The benefits are conditional, not always immediate, disputable, intangible. What does it mean to say we have a better transparency? That's intangible. And on top of that, different costs and different benefits are for different actors. And so there's a kind of tension between costs and benefits in this whole story. So if we want to improve our positions here, we have to not just create a positive cost-benefit analysis, we have to make efforts to make a positive cost-benefit analysis. That means we have to realize economies in providing and generating data, so not always asking the same thing, but trying to be economic in collecting and processing. And we have to increase the benefits of this performance by generating demand, by avoiding non-use, by avoiding abuse of indicators, by expand depth and scope. I will elaborate on that, so the supply. So again, the cost-benefit analysis is a crucial one. And if we want to go to heaven, to the performance heaven, we have to make sure that costs and benefits are recognized for the same actors, that there's a kind of solidarity and visibility, shared responsibilities again for costs and benefits, and that we organize an improved cost-benefit analysis for managing performance. The sixth point, I'm almost finished, is about supply and demand of performance information. Again, the worst position is, you know, many things happen and nobody supplies information and nobody asks for information. It's a kind of desert. It's a desert. Are you thirsty in a desert? Yes. But you're not aware of it. Yes, there are cactuses, etc. But it's a bit difficult to drink from the cactus. And suddenly something falls from heaven on your head. A scandal, a catastrophe, something goes wrong suddenly. And you say, why didn't we never collect data on that? Why didn't I know this? That's why we develop risk analysis. We need risk analysis to see what is in the A box here. We want to have as little things in the A box, because we cannot afford too much of catastrophes. But there is B and C, zones of frustration again. There is a supply, a lot of information, and nobody uses it. More the level of frustration. Yes, I'm sending it to the headquarters, to the central government, whatever, and then it disappears there. Nobody uses it. Or someone says, I want to know about this, and there is no supply. Zones of frustration. So again, we have to organize D. We have to not just organize supply, we have to organize demand, and we have to organize bringing together matching supply and demand. This is not happening automatically. We have to do this explicitly and very firmly. So we have to avoid it, for example, by shifting a supply-driven information system. What kind of data do we have? What kind of data do we use? Those that are available. So we have an availability-driven use, not a demand-driven use. We have to make more explicit what type of information we need to do what we want to do. We have to organize demand. For example, problem-driven indicator development. Savings, capacity building, quality, legitimacy, flexibility, mobility. We have to make sure that we have indicators on that if we think it's important. So we have to organize demand. What do you want to know? It's a very tough question. I mean, I've organized seminars on what do you want to know? And it's actually about structuring this supply-demand scheme. So if we want to go to performance heaven, we have to organize supply, we have to organize demand, and we have to bring them together. The seventh and last point, use versus non-use. We have to incorporate, and there are different ways to incorporate here, and I think one of the ways to incorporate is through the cycles. We have the policy cycle, the financial cycle, the contract cycle, and it's important to look at these cycles with the strategic plans, the budgets, the contracts, the monitoring systems, the evaluation and audit systems, and that's one way to look at incorporation. We have to use it, and the use could be hard or soft. It could be to learn, so you could loosely couple or tightly couple high impact or low impact. So we could use it to learn, to steer and control, to give account. So there's a kind of map here on where you primarily want to use things or not use things. Context is important too, especially these days. I mean, I talked about this is time and quantity of input and output, doing more with less. That's easily said. Actually, we are more and hopefully in doing more with the same. Or doing the same with less. Or perhaps doing less with much less resources. Or perhaps doing much more with a bit more resources. So the question is, what is the context you're in? And it can be quite differentiated. And the impact of the context is quite huge and considerable. So there are many reasons for non-use. I don't want to list all of them because we should end with the climax and not with a depression. There are consequences of non-use. But ultimately, the effect of using it is actually that we can be that we can learn, that we can steer and control. I mean, these are the official things, but it actually happens as such too. And I think to summarize and to conclude, your ticket to performance heaven is actually listed here. If you want to be the taxi driver and not a priest, it means we have to be awake in our preaching and we have to make sure others start praying for performance. It means we have to focus on the right things. We have to organize responsibility and accountability. We have to make sure we are ready for the story, politically and administratively. We have to make sure we are trusting good indicators. We have to make sure we have an improved cost-benefit analysis by decreasing costs and increasing benefits. We have to make sure we organize supply and demand and bring it together. And we have to make sure we use it ourselves to the benefit of the entire community. I once had a civil servant who said, I asked him, what are you doing in life? And he said, I'm a civil servant, but please don't tell my mother. I said, what we need actually is to connect performance and pride. We need to use performance and the visibility of performance. The word performance has two meanings in French and English. It's, of course, results, but it's also, if you go to the opera or jazz, you say a good performance. It's putting things on stage. We have to learn to put our performance on stage. And it will help to create civil servants that are proud, that stand on the marketplace and say, I'm a civil servant, I'm performing, and I'm responsible for a performing public sector within a performing public service. I'm a civil servant, and I'm very proud of that. And I see all of you very proud. I see the 18 examples there, which can even more proud than the others. The others will come there too. So I'm very happy that you are here. I'm very happy I could share some ideas, and I hope you will walk and march home proud with performance. Thank you very much and good luck.